Welcome to SEC Football Live. My name is Braden Gall. You can get to me on Twitter.com at Braden Gall. Today on the show, we are going to talk about the South Carolina Gamecocks. My guest, longtime friend, J.C. Sherbert, of course, from the Big Spur 24-7. Of course, inside the Gamecocks, the show as well. You can catch him all over the internet and has been covering South Carolina for a very, very long time. And I find this team to be utterly fascinating. I know I say that about every team, but Shane Beamer enters a critical year four after overachieving in year one and overachieving in year two, maybe underachieving or just achieving in year number three. Very, very difficult schedule, some issues along the offensive line, and obviously Spencer Rattler is no longer there. So the question for South Carolina is going to be, what are they? What is the state of the program currently? What's the state of the roster currently entering year number four with Shane Beamer? Of course, who exactly is Lenora Sellers, and how good could he be, the young quarterback, very talented quarterback for South Carolina? But also, why has it never worked? Why, with all the elite fan support and the great resources and the fertile recruiting territory, why has South Carolina never really been able to get over the hump and build a consistent championship contender? J.C. Sherbert's going to have the answer for that, as well as what should expectations be in 2024 for South Carolina and for Shane Beamer. So, going to be a ton of fun today on the show. Great conversation with JC. Always love talking to him. Make sure you hit subscribe on the YouTube page. 440 Sports got great content for you across every different team in the SEC. Of course, if you're listening to us in podcast form, rate, review, and subscribe. We really do appreciate you guys. SEC Football Live everywhere you get your podcast. So without further ado, our South Carolina state of the program with old friend JC Sherbert. J.C. Sherbert joining us here on the show. J.C., it has been way, way too long. How are you, my friend?
Man, it's great to see your face, Braden, and great to talk to you again, man. I was just telling the story. I tell the story all the time about the early days at Rivals, because I'm on with Bill King in Nashville every Thursday, and we talk about that. I remember you and Chris Childers and I and Greg Lackey, we all started the same day, Rivals Radio, and man, guess what? That's been 20 years.
I don't want to guess.
In December, it'll be 20 years, man.
I don't want to guess that. It's wild, man. Those were wild times. Certainly very interesting times in the recruiting world. And the game, of course, has changed every which way possible between then and now. And sure, we don't even have time today on the show to try to cover all those different changes. I did have an episode with Chris Childers recently, so go check out that episode. We told some stories. Richard Johnson, of course, we had on recently this week to talk a lot about how we cover those changes. So again, a little shameless promotion there, but I'm here to talk about South Carolina, and I'm here to talk about the Gamecocks. And I want to sort of just, we're going to cover sort of a state of the program here, because I'm fascinated with the job Shane Beamer has done, but both in a very positive sense in the first 2 years. Certainly an incredibly difficult schedule got to them in year three. But right now, going into year four with what he's accomplished, maybe even being a victim of his own success to start his tenure there, you know, very famously a guy that was like, look, you don't need to be a coordinator. You don't need to call plays to be a head coach. He's not necessarily wrong about that at all, as we saw in the first 2 years. Where are the fans with how they're evaluating Shane Beamer at this stage in March, going into a very important spring and summer for South Carolina football?
I think South Carolina fans are, you know, Will Muschamp, who replaced Coach Spurrier, was in an impossible situation with the fans. They could, I think his tenure at Florida followed him to Carolina largely. And I remember his year three, gosh, they had a bunch of injuries on defense, but that's the year Jake Bentley threw for 500 yards at Clemson and they lost and couldn't stop anybody. And then they got shut out by Virginia in the bowl. It was ugly. So, even though Will, you know, took the Gamecocks to three bowls in a row and Beamer missed a bowl last year, I would say it's somewhere in between their satisfaction after year three with coaches Holtz and Spurrier, where they never really got off the bandwagon, to not as pitchforky as Muschamp. you know, and Beamer's got some people that are, yeah, they questioned him or whatnot, but you know, he's had better moments than Will Muschamp did. I mean, Will Muschamp won 9 games his second year, but a lot of those wins, the win over Michigan and Harbaugh was nice, but a lot of those wins were over teams like that fired their coaches, Brett Bielema at Arkansas that year, et cetera. You know, it's signature wins like the Tennessee win and the Clemson win still go a long way. Beamer's recruiting really well. They only signed 16 high school guys. Braden in this past class, so the ranking getting all that high. But if you look, South Carolina had 8 signees. All these ever happened that played in either what used to be the Army All-American Bowl or the Under Armour All-American game. South Carolina's recruiting out-of-state 5 stars. That's something that never happens at South Carolina. So the recruiting's good. I think the disappointment from last year, because it was just so frustrating with the injury, with the schedule, the injuries on the offensive line, the disaster blocking against North Carolina in the opener.
And then
finally to get to a place where you played probably Dabo's worst team at Clemson since 2010. You hold them without an offensive touchdown at your own place, and you still only put 7 points up. South Carolina has scored 1 meaningful touchdown against the Tigers at Williams-Brice Stadium in Columbia since 2015, and that was in the first quarter of this past year. Got shut out the rest of the way. So that's frustrating, and you know what that game means to South Carolina fans. But I think most people are – happy with what Beamer's done. I think that, you know, when you look at his assistant coaches that he hired this offseason, because some folks left and stuff, he kind of went more for experience, major experience, whether that's NFL or college. I mean, Joe DeCamillis is a legend of a special teams coach for the NFL, and he's on the staff now. The guy they hired, Mike Fury, who led the Lions, I guess, a few years ago and played for the Rams, Lions, and all that. He's the new receivers coach. Marquell Blackwell came over from A&M to coach running backs. He found Quinshon Judkins, obviously. And then they brought Sean Elliott back, the head coach at Georgia State, to be the run game coordinator. You know, South Carolina has done well recruiting running backs out of the transfer portal. And they have a guy that can beat you with his legs and his arm taking over in Lenora Sellers, who's I think you guys are all going to like when you finally watch him. So it made a lot of sense. And so I think that gives people hope, but certainly the idea at South Carolina while you're building is to do what Steve Spurrier did. And Spurrier missed the bowl in his third year too. He was 6-6, but to keep it above water, and then you keep building, building, building. And then it's eventually, you know, it's proven that if you stick with the coach long enough, eventually it'll turn, you know? So I think they did well in the transfer portal, filling some holes, getting rid of some dead weight. So I'm cautiously optimistic against what is on paper a nightmare of a schedule for the Gamecocks. But I think a lot of that, Braden, is because it's different for the first time in 30 years.
Yeah.
No Florida, no Tennessee, no Georgia.
It's weird
on the schedule next season. So it's really weird. So, well, you know,
I want to ask about the depth in the roster as well. But I'm curious about infrastructure, because that's like the thing that's so hard to pinpoint now when we evaluate programs. And it ties into boosters. It's the number of boosters that can write big checks to get what they want. And now it's boosters that can write big checks for NIL and for collectives. It's school infrastructure, building out the athletic department to be able to handle all the different roles you need to have, sort of clicking at all cylinders to sort of function at a high level. I'm curious where South Carolina is. Your perspective, I know you've been around the recruiting world for a very, very long time. Your perspective on, like, where is South Carolina relative to the rest of the big guys in the SEC in terms of collective booster commitment, back end infrastructure that allows all these new things to help South Carolina build?
Well, they're not hurting for money. I mean, just like any other SEC program isn't. And facilities wise, you know, they've come a million miles since we started working at Rivals together 20 years ago. Coach Spurrier got there and was like, oh, shoot, we got to, you know, he wasn't a big facilities guy in Florida, but he got there and he's like, oh, shoot, we got to catch up. So
yeah,
they built some things and they've continued to build, and it's unrecognizable as to how it used to be. That's Williams-Brice Stadium. That's a $50 million football ops building that's, you know, 3-4 years old. That's an indoor practice facility that I think's the largest indoor field in the country, as far as college football goes. You know, the players have nice places to live when they live on campus, and that's good. NIL has been one of those things at South Carolina specifically that kind of got off to a clunky start through no fault of anybody's. It was because the rules kept changing, and then, you know, the state laws, and frankly, Clemson was kind of in that same boat NIL-wise. A lot of this NIL stuff has to do with your state and your state government. But they're on the right track now. I would say that they were toward the bottom of the league NIL-wise there for a while, but I'm kind of in that world as well, Braden. So as part of a collective and stuff. And so I kind of have gotten some encouraging news of late as far as like where exactly they stand. And I don't think it's toward the bottom at all. And I think in this world with NIL collectives, what you don't want to do is start up here and then the bottom falls out because people get mad because it's all booster driven. And they'll get mad because you're losing, and then they'll pull their money.
Yep.
At South Carolina, it's a much more sustainable thing. And so you're never going to run into a situation where you can't pay players, which is something that's happened at a few schools that we would think were doing really well in NIL-wise that haven't. Yep. So that's the positive of the slow start there is that it's sustainable. It's got a good foundation, and there's been no embarrassing situations, which could hurt you worse than not having any money these days.
This might be unanswerable, but we were sort of ranking all the programs and looking at all the natural resources, and South Carolina is one of these programs that sort of defies logic to some degree, because there's no place where you can go to a game and sit with 75,000 people and have that type of game day atmosphere with that, to your point, that type of revenue and resources in a recruiting base that is as fertile as Columbia is. Like they check every box of a major big time power program: fans, resources, money, recruiting, stadium, atmosphere, like all that stuff. But it never has. I mean, outside of one stretch with, by the way, the most underrated player in the history of the SEC, the follically challenged Connor Shaw, my favorite player maybe ever in program history. Just love watching that guy play. It's never really worked. And I am fascinated with why. Why has it never really worked?
Well, there's been two breakthrough opportunities, two seasons, and I think a lot of schools would take this. In 84, the 80s were different, obviously, Braden, but Georgia. Georgia, Clemson, South Carolina are all sitting there together, you know, as a triangle. Georgia won it in 80 with Herschel Walker. Clemson won it in 81. In 1984, South Carolina started 9-0, ranked number 2 in the country. Went to Navy and lost. Navy didn't even have its best player. amazingly enough, I live outside of Chicago with my wife most of the time. And our little watering hole we go to, a guy that owns that bar played on that 84 Navy team. So I perpetually get crap about it because I wear my Gamecock stuff in there, right? So they lost to Navy. I mean, my God. And then they ended up beating Clemson, finished 10-1. They would have been in the Orange Bowl playing for a national championship and probably would have won it that year because BYU ended up being the national champion that season.
That's right.
And then the other time was 2013, and I went to Knoxville for this game. It was Butch Jones' first year, and, you know, South Carolina was coming off of a 52-7 win at Arkansas. They were rolling. Connor Shaw was rolling, you know, and they lost to Champions of Life. And that loss cost them the SEC East. Well, what happened later that year, you had the kick six. So you had Auburn instead of Bama and Ellis Johnson, who Coach Spurrier called plays against in practice every day. I tend to think the Gamecocks probably would have been successful there. Michigan State beats Ohio State. Gamecocks would have been in the Rose Bowl playing Florida State for the national championship. So there's been very few windows of opportunity, but when they've happened, it just hasn't worked out. I think leaving the ACC and spending all that time as an independent kind of, you know, affected what's called alignment from top to bottom, because it was just, there's so much change. You're just kind of in the wilderness. Clemson's up there doing what Clemson does. And you know, they kept trying to reinvent the wheel. That kind of changed when Lou Holtz took over. He deserves a lot of credit because he didn't win a ton, but he won enough. And then Steve Spurrier saw, hey, this program's got some potential. And, you know, Spurrier just had a few games here and there that if they'd gone another way, we may be talking about them winning the East 5 times in a row during that time period. Since then, I mean, I understood why they hired Will Muschamp, because the roster was in bad shape. You needed a recruiter. You know, unfortunately, that didn't work out. That was sad. And now you have Shane Beamer. And I think the answer is, there's not been a ton of consistency outside of Spurrier. I mean, you're talking about a program that changes coaches every 4 or 5 years. You know, I think the great programs can do that all they want. But you're still only that one hire away from being really good.
Yep.
I mean, look at Josh Heupel.
Yep.
You know, I'm not saying Tennessee's back, but Tennessee is closer to where they were under Fulmer all those years than they were under Derek Dooley. Okay. Or Jeremy Pruitt or whoever. Florida will probably go through another coaching change soon, but that program's still only that good hire away. At South Carolina, that's probably not going to happen. Even one of the best coaches in the history of the game, you know, did not have that breakthrough season until his sixth year when Marcus Lattimore came in and they won the East. And then, you know, they had those three straight 11 win years. So it's a slower build. I don't know that, you know, you talk about build, you know, these days you're not going to be able to go three straight losing seasons and build that way, especially with the portal and all that, you'll lose half your team. But, you know, at South Carolina, a slower build is, hey, have years like you had in 2022, go to the Gator Bowl. Some years you may be in the Mayonnaise Bowl. Some years it may be Birmingham, but get to bowls, have winning seasons, stack recruiting classes. Now you got the transfer portal. And eventually it works out. So that's long story short, you know, and I think right now what's positive about Beamer and is that the alignment I talked about, it's finally there from athletic director on down. That alignment's finally there at South Carolina. So, you know, you don't have to worry about politics and things like that anymore. Whereas in the past with all the comings and goings and, you know, you just didn't really know, you know, sometimes you kind of wondered who's in charge, you know? So that's a thing of the past.
Well, it feels like I agree with you alignment. And I mean, obviously being independent, that to your point, like reinventing the wheel, it changes your resources, where you focus. The game also has evolved so much since 92 as well. What's interesting is what's after alignment is normally like investment. And after investment comes patience. And that's just not a thing that most SEC fans or coaches enjoy. But Mark Stoops, for example, who I know is like arch enemy number one with Shane Beamer, which I think is absolutely wonderful. The two of them.
It's crazy, man.
I love it. Like the two nicest guys in the league, like hate each other. It's great.
That's crazy.
What they did was it was patient. It was alignment, investment and patience. And that's now, of course, now fans in Kentucky are like, what's your second act going to look like? So even that can wear thin at times. It sounds like the investment and the patience portion now is what you're preaching to people. Like they've got the alignment. Yeah. Now they got the right people. Let's invest and let's show some patience.
Yeah, somewhat. I mean, you know, you don't patience. It's even different when Stoops took over when 2013 at Kentucky. Things were different then. I mean, you know, you had.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at Kentucky, I mean, Joker Phillips didn't leave it pretty, you know, and it was going to take time. And I think at Kentucky, they're underrated football fans, Braden. And I'm not going to play the dumb basketball school card. There's a basketball school. Nah, Duke is a basketball school. North Carolina, Indiana.
They've had some hard sellouts.
Yeah, dude. Against LSU, against Tennessee.
Yeah.
Yeah, now I'm not saying I'm not a fan of the DJ at Commonwealth Stadium because I like the Kentucky fight song and marching band, and you can't hear it half the time.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But yeah, it's a sea of blue. Those fans support football, but I also think because they struggled for so long, before Mark Stoops, that they're much more patient. Mississippi State fans are like this too. They're very patient. Yeah. I'm saying that, and they fired a coach after 2 years recently. But anyway,
it was an audition.
Mississippi State are a 2-1 because Moorhead lasted two and Arnett lasted one. So maybe they're not. But you know, they're realistic about things. I'm not saying South Carolina fans aren't, but Spurrier raised the bar enough, and I hope for the Gamecocks' sake and the fan base's sake, he didn't do what he did to the Florida fan base because. And I think a little Urban Meyer probably plays a factor there too. You want to talk about impatient. I mean, I don't know what they're three straight losing seasons right now at Florida. And it's like, the world is ending, but you know, I think that, I think Gamecock fans are a little less patient than maybe Kentucky. I also don't think the program was in as bad a shape.
Yeah.
With what Muschamp left. So, you know, maybe some patience. I look at this year, I think it is important for South Carolina to go back to postseason. You know, they've got three cupcakes in Clemson in the non-conference. They still play Vandy, still play Kentucky. You just got to steal one here or there and you can get there. But it's you know, I guess that answer is yes, but yes and no. Yes, they need to be patient, but probably not as – it's probably not going to happen like the Kentucky thing.
So where is this roster relative to this – and it's hard because it's like there's going to be more changes and we know another portal window and, you know, there's all kinds of stuff that could happen between now and August when camp opens up. But just in theory, at this stage of each of the first three seasons – and then compare that to where this roster is now. Offensive line, obviously, a huge concern. We'll ask about the quarterback in a second, but they had the quarterback for the last couple of years. Mm. And they've had some really nice pieces around that quarterback. And some of it, great coaching by Beamer in game management. I know he probably hates, maybe he doesn't, I don't know, maybe he hates the Beamer ball moniker, but like part of the success in the first 2 years was just really tremendous in game management. Smart decision making in key situations, and to me that is what his father Frank was all about, and I think that's how he executed the first two seasons. That didn't happen as much in the third season, mostly because of the schedule and the talent. Where's the talent on this team relative to his first 3 years? Is it more talented? Is it deeper? Is it more balanced? What do you make of that?
Talent, okay, so talent can be, it's measured in a lot of different ways, as we all know, you know, working in recruiting and stuff. I would say you look at depth, quality depth. Defensively, South Carolina's deeper than it was when he took over at all positions. I mean, they're going to try, you know, they have two 30-year safeties that are special, and Evan Ware and Smith, a guy that in Kilgore that was a freshman All-American right there back with them. They're probably about six deep at corner with young untested guys, but still guys that aren't true freshmen. They did a great job in the portal at linebacker. You know, Pup Howard and Stone Blanton leave. Those are two former four-star guys. And they signed this kid, Kamara from Pitt, and this kid from Charlotte that are upgrade speed and athleticism-wise. So linebacker, which has never really been deep, is deeper. They probably could use more younger D-tackles, but they have some veterans there and added some pieces. DeAndre Jules, also from Pitt, is going to be important there. And then defensive edge-wise, you're still sitting on Desmond Umiazulu, who was a four-star redshirt freshman last year. Dylan Stewart was one of the best players in the country. He'll come in and start most likely. They got Kyle Kennard from Georgia Tech. Plus, they returned some veterans like Jatias Gear, who was a Syracuse transfer last year, who was hurt all year. So defensively, I think they're deep. Offensive line-wise, young but talented. Braden, if you look at Carolina's recruiting on the offensive line, they've never had this much on paper at that position. We're talking Under Armour All-Americans, four-star, five-star guys. Josiah Thompson was considered by many as the best tackle in the country. They're just all in their first and second year. Yeah. And they do have some veterans back. Running back was atrocious last year, depth-wise. And they went and got three from the portal and then one from high school. And I think they're going to be fine there. You know, receiver wise, tight ends look pretty good. Receiver, they would like to land one more out of the portal just because you lose Leggett and then Juice Wells went to Ole Miss or whatever. I mean, there's really nobody there that's done much of anything. So they probably at South Carolina. So they probably are going to, you know, need to beef up that receiving room in the next portal window, if possible, with another guy or two.
So his best roster at this stage of this year, in your opinion?
I'd say if you go position by position,
depth-wise.
But I mean, I'm gonna say this though, that's what separates the wheat from the chaff in the SEC though, Ben. I've learned through the years, it's not that every team has good starters. Some have great starters.
Yeah,
it's the depth. So when you run into an injury situation, Georgia. Yeah, they're plugging in another guy that's not even necessarily a talented freshman, maybe a second, third-year guy that's just as good as their starter. You know, South Carolina, man, you have a couple of injuries at one or two spots. You may be playing a walk-on.
Yeah.
So talk about the Spurrier era, that was the key there. South Carolina, outside of what happened to Marcus Lattimore, which was tragic, South Carolina really did not have a lot of major injuries during the Spurrier era. They stayed healthy, and they felt like their top 22, top 44 could play with anybody.
And every four and five star in the state ended up playing in the NFL for like 10 years.
So yes.
That certainly helps. All right, Lenore Sellers, on the ground, what do we not know about him, and what kind of game does he bring to the table? So for folks that are not on the ground and haven't been around him and haven't covered him, what does the rest of the SEC need to know about this young guy?
Well, you're going to look at him and you're going to start, people can start talking about Dante Culpepper, or they'll start talking about KJ Jefferson, or they're still talking about Jamarcus Russell, or, you know, somebody like, or, you know, maybe Cam Newton, if they see him break away on a run. I think he's kind of his own guy. I evaluated Cam Newton out of high school. Bobby Burton and I rated him 5 stars out of high school. I think that was a great move we made at Rivals because he turned out to be really good. People, you know, my thought process was he's going to Florida. That read option offense is perfect for him, you know.
And then he stole some computers.
Yeah, the rest is history. But he's his own guy. I mean, I've never really, you know, as far as like his tools and skill set, as far as mechanics of throwing the ball, I mean, he's got great arm mechanics. He doesn't have an erratic arm. He's an accurate passer. He's a strong arm thrower. He's got velocity. And the accuracy is something that a lot of times athletic dual threat guys don't always have. Then running the ball, he's 242 pounds and runs a 4.45. He's a little freaky, you know? And so, and plus he's an honor student, had a 5-point whatever GPA out of high school and a great SAT and, in practices, he has no problem learning offense, making reads, things like that. So there's a lot of qualities about him. The only thing is, you know, there's no film. I mean, Vandy, he played against Vandy and, did some things. He played against Furman, did some things, and saw a couple of snaps against Kentucky in a special package. So, you know, we'll see, you know, what happens with him. But I think I have a lot of trust and faith in him without going overboard and overhyping this guy. You look at all the data and the feedback you get for him, I have faith that this guy is going to be something that, people are going to enjoy watching next year.
It certainly would make for an interesting twist on the offensive scheme, probably, to go from a rattler, a guy that could pinpoint it the way he did. All right, I'll let you go on this, and do appreciate your time, of course. Thanks. Sure, thanks for hanging out, of course. And we do appreciate it. So ultimately, very broadly, what are expectations? You said getting back to the postseason is sort of the goal. Is that where fans should be with this team? Like, they're probably going to win some games they shouldn't. Maybe they lose some games they shouldn't. They're around 500. They get to the postseason. That's considered a success.
Yeah, 6-6, 7-5 would be acceptable. I mean, you know, when you're talking about a quarterback with that kind of skill set, though, Braden, as you know, that can sometimes steal you. If he's what everybody thinks and gets blocking and stuff, that could equal a much better season. Or if there's a lot of injuries again and things don't quite click, you got A&M, Oklahoma, Ole Miss, Alabama, LSU on the schedule next year. I mean, that's ridiculous. So, you know, and of those teams I just mentioned, A&M and Oklahoma are probably the best shots at a win. So, it's crazy. But, I think getting back, you know, getting through this year, you know, 2025 is a season South Carolina's kind of pointed to since Beamer's gotten here. They open actually with Virginia Tech at the Chick-fil-A kickoff in 2025. That's kind of a year, I think. Yeah. Everybody's pointing to. So get through this one, have a good year four. I mean, Will Muschamp fell to 4-8 in year four. So that's, you want to avoid that. Any kind of winning season bowl trip, I think is going to be really good for this team. And I think they quite frankly have enough players coming back to do it. The problem is everybody else has players too. And you got to go play some very tough competition.
Yes, you do. At JC Sherbert, of course, on Twitter.com, the cesspool that is. You can catch him all over the internet, all over the shows. You got the website as well. So thank you so much for hanging out, man. We really do appreciate it. Thank you, dude.
Hey, thanks, Braden. You've been good. Good to see you.